Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Web Sleuth Radio, everybody. Web Sleuth Radio is brought to you by a wonderful organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. This is a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. Kimster is here. She is our executive producer and CEO of anything she wants to be. I'll give her any title she wants. I'll even give her business cards. Okay. For you older people, you can tell right now that I sound just like Raymond Burr when he was Perry Mason. I look like a bloated squid, and my head will explode at any moment. But other than that, I am feeling great. Yes, it is the cold from hell. Plus, I have swallowed something called Green Justin. Now, don't panic. Green Justin is the name given to some strong cough medicine I have, and I've had it in the past. I have some on hand in cases of emergency like this one where I don't want to cough during my show. Now, why is it called Green Justin? Because it's green. And you see Justin Bieber when you take it. Yes, you do hallucinate. It's that strong and that frightening, but you don't cough when you're on it. So if I start sounding like a rich 17-year-old boy who hasn't hit puberty yet, it's just because of Green Justin. And by the way, thank you all for your help with your home remedies for the cold. I actually did try several of them, and I'm convinced had I not done so, I would have been a lot worse. It actually did help. So thank you. Later in the show, I will be interviewing a very interesting man. He's true crime author Scott Kowalty, and Scott wrote a very fascinating true crime book called Brother's Blood, A Heartland, Cain, and Abel, and you're going to find this fascinating. But first up, it's our good friend, we love and adore him, Levi Page. Levi, welcome, my dear. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, Trisha, thanks for having me. Hope you get to feeling better soon.
Thank you. And just to let everybody know, I have been totally out of touch. I've just been sleeping and drinking my Green Justin. So, Levi, you're going to have to help me here kind of get caught up. I have heard, and I'm not quite sure what it's about, so I think you can fill in the blanks here. What is going on with the Reynolds case? Isn't there some new blood evidence, Ayla Reynolds?
Yes, and everybody is familiar with the Ayla Reynolds case. It's been in the news since December, a couple of weeks before Christmas, December 18th, this child vanished. She was put to bed around 8 p.m. at night. Her father, Justin DePetro, she was staying at his home. She was put to bed, and then the next morning around 8 a.m., 9 a.m., she was reported missing by the father. And the father, Justin DePetro, has come under a lot of scrutiny from the press, the police, and the public. And now that scrutiny is just going to intensify as we're hearing that blood was present in the basement area of the DePetro home. And this is a home where Justin DePetro lived with his mother, Phoebe DePetro, and there were other family members also in the home that night, and there was blood evidence found in the basement of the DePetro home. That just came out late yesterday evening. We're not hearing how much blood it is, but we're just hearing that there was blood found in the basement. We're not hearing whose blood it is. They're not releasing that
right.
That I've read. But if it's a baby blood, I mean, you know, babies, they don't really cut themselves that much. You know, they're not, you know, making food and dicing things. So
right.
If there's a substantial amount of blood belonging to a missing baby, that's pretty incriminating there that something bad happened inside that home. But again, we don't know whose blood
it is. If that's what it is, we don't know whose blood it is. They don't say how old it is. Do they say it's fresh? Do we know that?
No, we're just everything that I've read has just said that the Maine State Police confirmed blood was found in the basement. And
so,
I think actually Justin DePetro was the one that was one of the family members inside the home. This is his mother, Phoebe's home. It was her blood in the basement. It was not the mother's blood, but he was staying in the basement. That's where he stayed.
That's where he stayed. He was living. Mm-hmm. That's where he slept. That's where his area was in the basement. And so that's where the blood was found. It's interesting that the police have released that information. You have to think that
they've took it a step further. In their comments, they really have not been that critical of Justin DiPietro or his family. But now I was watching the news today where now they're becoming more and more critical of the family. They're saying, you know, the family is not being truthful with them and that they may be withholding information from law enforcement. So police have been very critical of the family today, and now we're hearing that there was blood found in the home.
And so you almost have to think, okay, now they're putting the pressure on. You know, that's a tactic that we have seen over and over and over.
And Tricia, just last week, I think it was, maybe a couple of weeks ago, we learned that Justin DiPietro was finally hooked up to a polygraph. I guess he refused to take one during the initial stages of the investigation.
Uh-huh.
And he is claiming that he smoked the polygraph. And people are asking to elaborate, well, what does that mean? And then he's saying, well, I don't know how I did on the polygraph. And the police have came out and they have said, you do know how you did on the polygraph. We told you the results of the polygraph. Now, the police are not releasing the results to the media, but the police have said that Justin does know the results of the polygraph.
And so why won't...
It's very strange.
And so why won't he come out and say, here is what happened when I took the polygraph? Obviously, everything is pointing to that this guy is lying. Now, hasn't Ayla's mother all along felt that he wasn't being truthful, or am I getting my cases mixed up here?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is very, very similar to the Haley Cummings case, the case in Florida where the parents are battling it out on the airwaves. You know, she had tried to get custody of this child before this child went missing, and she had cited examples of bruising on this child, of a mysterious broken arm that this child has, and she
mm-hmm.
points fingers at the father as possibly, allegedly being abusive towards Ayla, and the father has denied that. And they have been battling it out in the court of public opinion. She does have her problems related with substance abuse. I believe it's alcohol. She was in rehab. She's out of rehab now. And I've seen an interview with her today in the news, and she was very troubled that her daughter's blood was found in the home. And she said that she just does not know how to process that, obviously. She
yes.
wants the child to be alive. But she was not even living in the area, so I don't think that she's a suspect or a person of interest at this point, although
mm-hmm.
last week she did attempt to take a polygraph but was unable to complete it because of the medication or a mysterious illness that she may have had.
Oh, my gosh. Levi, what is going on? Do you feel like there is an epidemic of these parents that are, you know, abusing drugs or alcohol, and all of a sudden their kids go missing and it's always suspicious?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when was the last time we had a true stranger abduction? You know, I'm sure there's one out there, but it always seems to point back to the parents.
Yes.
Now, I know in the beginning, I talked to Mark Klass about this, and you know, he was going easy on the dad. You know, he was saying that people are being too hard on him, and you know, Mark is not one to mm-hmm. fool around. He doesn't go for any bull at all, but he's also very fair. So I just kind of,
mm-hmm.
when Mark said that, I thought, okay, I'm gonna step back. But now with this blood thing, I'm sorry. You know,
you know, in the beginning, all we knew was that the child was missing and that the mom had been in rehab and that she was throwing around allegations of abuse. There's nothing really to substantiate her allegations of abuse. That's just her theory
mm-hmm.
of what happened to her child, that the child was being abused. So really, in the very early stages, there was nothing that made you say, this guy's suspicious. But then it came out later on, he was releasing statements through the media. He would refuse
right.
to go to the media himself. And in every statement that he released to the media, it was really not about his missing child. It was just all about him and the pain
mm-hmm.
and hurt that he was going for. And he even, a while back, released a statement, and he was angry with Nancy Grace, and he wanted Nancy Grace to, you know, walk a mile in his shoes.
Oh,
you know, why
right.
doesn't he go on her show? Because that would be an excellent platform to be interviewed by her and get the case that national attention. Because so often the parents, I mean, look at Beth Holloway, for example.
Right.
That case was everywhere, on every station, every primetime news show. It's gotten worldwide coverage, and the reason it did was because Beth Holloway was constantly pounding the pavement, constantly putting pressure on Jeroen van der Sloot and law enforcement to do their job. He isn't. He's releasing statements, and he's just complaining about how bad he's being treated, trying to paint himself as the victim instead of his child. And now
exactly.
the police are searching water in this area, water areas, rivers, lakes, ponds, in this town of Waterville, Maine, and that is telling right there.
It is. And, you know, Levi, as we have seen, and the people, the listeners and the members of Web Sleuths and the people that listen to your show and read your blog, Levi, how many times have we seen a parent come on and say, oh, poor me, poor, poor, pitiful me, look at everything I am going through, and yet they don't do anything about it. But you know what it is? You know, again, it's a very interesting study in psychology, and that is they think that they can fool everybody because they've probably fooled people in the past. So they are in, you know, in the national spotlight, you know, never dreamed they would be. And they are just going along thinking, hey, I can lie to them just like I've lied to my mom, my dad, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, whatever.
That's,
and it never works. Never works.
And in this case, the grandmother of Ayla, the paternal grandmother, her name is Phoebe DiPietro. She is the mother of Justin, and she is very suspicious in this case because she is constantly trying to defend her grandson. She gave some interviews that didn't go very well for her where she was trying to just push this theory that someone came into the home and took this child. And she said that they asked her, well, what do you base that on? And her reasoning was that there had been objects that were misplaced, removed from the house. And when they asked her to elaborate and give examples on that, she refused to do so. You know, if something's missing, why can't she say, well, you know, this piece of furniture was missing, this piece of furniture looked like it was removed, a picture was missing from the house, objects belonging to the missing child are missing. She could not give an example of what happened. And it was very weird. And she, a lot of people are putting her under scrutiny, because she is, you know, flip-flopping, you know, whether she was at the home the night the child vanished or whether she was not at the home the night the child vanished. She's telling conflicting stories.
And, you know, again, they think they can get away with it, and they just can't. Not with people like our listeners and our members out there, Levi, who follow every word and keep track of it. You can't get away with it anymore. And it's...
We've,
again,
everybody's seen too many of these cases.
Exactly.
And they know the pattern. They know how these people operate. And it's just narcissism. A lot of people are just so into themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like this man, Justin DiPietro, playing the victim. Oh, look at what I'm going through. Look at how I'm the victim here. Look at how mean Nancy Grace is being to me. And, you know, I watched Nancy Grace's show, and she was not tough. She was not soft on him. But I don't think that she was as tough as on him as she has been a lot of other people.
Right.
So, you know, he was a little overly sensitive there.
Well, maybe he is feeling the heat, which I kind of hope he is. But then, as we have seen again in cases like this, if they never find the child, it's almost impossible to get any sort of arrest. Now, that's not the case with adults for some reason. We've seen a lot of murder cases where they have gone ahead and charged them, but they've never had a body. But for some reason, with kids, babies, toddlers, you know, when it's obviously a parent is lying and a parent is involved, they can't for some reason or won't bring charges, I guess because they're afraid to, because they have one shot. And if they blow it, then they blow it. And that's probably their biggest fear. So they want to kind of wait it out. And that's a good strategy. I'm sure the police don't need me to tell me they have good strategy, but I will, because that's my job. Okay, Levi, go ahead. Go, what were you going to say?
I just want to point out this house, Tricia, is very small. I've looked at the picture of the house. It's very small. There was a lot of adults in the home that night. And, you know, really, how is an intruder going to come in and take a child undetected with so many people inside the home? It's a very small house. And I know that people like to point out the Jessica Lunsford case. It was a trailer, very small trailer, where someone was able to come in and take Jessica Lunsford, John Evander Cooley, a sex offender. But in that case, Jessica Lunsford was living with her elderly grandmother. Her father, I think, was a truck driver, and he was not home that
night. He was not home that
night. And this person probably knew, look, you know, this is an older woman in the house. Her hearing's probably not as good. She, you know, I can easily get in here and take this child. He probably had planned this out and knew that. In this case, there were several adults in the home, and it was a very, very small home.
And so why would an intruder risk that, especially with the dad being home? You know, he's not an old guy. He would think protect his child. And you brought up Jessica and Mark.
It's not
Lunsford.
Impossible. It's not
no, it
impossible.
Isn't. No, it isn't. You're
it's
right.
Suspicious.
But look at how Mark Lunsford behaved as opposed to Justin here. I mean, night and day. Night and day. And boy,
yes.
Remember they put his father, they put Mark Lunsford's father through the ringer because he had been arrested before and he was living there and everybody knew it was just him and, you know, and they put him through the ringer, but it didn't stop the family from going out in front of the cameras and saying, hey, help us find her, you know. And they never once complained. They never once said, oh, poor me. They just said, oh, please God, help us find Jessica. And that, you know, that's just such a telltale sign. That's just the sign right there. I have yet to see a case, and Levi, maybe you can correct me, but I have yet to see a case where a family has behaved like this or a parent has behaved like a Casey Anthony or a Justin or a Ramsey or whatever, and they've turned out that they had absolutely no involvement in it. Never, haven't seen it happen yet.
Yeah.
You know, they've always
and
had
even
some involvement.
The suspicion always lingers around them, even if there's not hard proof that they
exactly.
did it. There will always be that suspicion around them because people have common sense and they can say, you know, we can look at this and something's not right. It's not right here that you cannot give us a clear answer on how you performed on your polygraph. It's not right here that when you're releasing statements to the media, it's all about you and not much about your daughter. It's not right here that you cannot give us a clear answer as to why there was blood in the home that night. Whose blood is it? I mean,
exactly.
He should know if his child was bleeding or not. He should know. He should clear that up.
Exactly. And apparently he hasn't yet. And that is the big red flag right there. Again, a million red flags on this case. We'll follow this very, very closely, as I know you will too, Levi, on your show and your blog. Okay, Levi, it's time to turn to something kind of gossipy now. And this is kind of an extension of my segment, What the Hell Has Casey Anthony Done This Time? Now it's What the Hell Has the People that Try and Feed Off Casey Anthony, What Have They Done This Time? I don't even know where to begin. When you showed me this tonight, Levi, I was just dumbfounded.
Crazy.
Holly Briley is the woman, and her husband said they found the tape, the video of Casey Anthony. They said they found it on an adult website that was charging money. They took it off the website and put it on YouTube, but they couldn't remember the adult website. Okay, that to me sounded very suspicious. Now, I have communicated with Holly via email. I found her to be very nice, very upfront, and no problem whatsoever. And then,
glad she's
boom.
Nice to you.
I know. I think I'm the only one. I had no problem with her. The communication we had was open. She seemed to be honest. No problem. All I can say is I absolutely enjoyed emailing with her. And then our friend Kim Capaz, Kim, oh my goodness, see, it's the green Justin kicking in now. Kim Vicazio, our attorney friend in Florida, she is now involved, and she was just sitting there minding her own business. Levi, you got to clear this up. Bring this all home to us, okay?
Listen,
I didn't
everybody
know where to start.
That follows the Haley Cummings case, the child that went missing in Florida in 2009, knows who Kim Vicazio is. She once represented the mother of Haley and was involved in that case. She has absolutely nothing, zip, to do with the Casey Anthony case. She
right.
talked about it on my show a couple of times, just as a commentator explaining the legal process, because she's an attorney, and she's been on HLN. But other than that, she has no personal involvement in the Casey Anthony case at all.
Mm-hmm.
She is friendly with myself and another blogger, that, and this blogger was critical of the Briley story. They found it suspicious what Holly Briley is doing. They were following a group of people on Twitter who called themselves the Kaylee's Warriors. And
mm-hmm.
listen, everybody that knows me, they know that I think that Casey Anthony was responsible. I thought the prosecution proved their case. I'm not a defender of Casey Anthony. I used to be sympathetic to these Kaylee Warriors. And Holly,
right.
I used to not have any sort of problem with her. I said, you know, good job, you know, keep speaking the truth. But, you know, a lot of people found her story suspicious. She could not name the website that
That's
she found the video
me.
On.
That's
and then
what
it,
bothers me.
It wasn't the website. It wasn't the website that she found it on. It was on Facebook. So it changed from Facebook to a pay-per-view website and this and that. And there's been all sorts of rumors. I don't know what's true or what's
well,
not.
Well, now I have it in writing
them.
From her, an email that said she found it on an adult website, but she couldn't remember the name.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And she's also said Facebook.
Okay.
But anyway, she was angry that a blogger that was friendly with Kim was being critical of her. So she apparently, and someone had created an account called Casey Got Screwed
mm-hmm.
on
Jeez.
Twitter, and they were just trashing Kim and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought Holly Briley was behind it. And Kim reached out to Holly through Facebook and through email, and Holly Briley responded. And
Hold on, before you say anything. So Kim Picazio reaches out to Holly and says, hey, are you behind this? She didn't do it accusatory,
mm-hmm.
right? She just said, hey, are
no.
you behind this? What's going on? I mean, Kim, I know Kim. She's a sweet lady, as kind
mm-hmm.
as the day is long. So she just reached out and said, hey, are you doing this? What's going on, right?
Yes, because she's
okay,
not even involved in the case.
Right. So then what
Holly said... Holly responded and said that basically Kim Picazio had 48 hours to get this blog. One of her friends was blogging about and was being critical of the Brileys. You have 48 hours to get it taken down, or else this Twitter account is going to post some ludicrous, probably made-up information about her family. And needless to say, I think that they chose the wrong person to mess with, because anybody that knows Kim, she is very nice. I like her, but she's a pit bull. If
you
get
don't
her
do it.
Angry and if
well,
you try,
well, now how do they know? How do they know
her?
This communication came from Holly? Did she sign her name?
Well,
wasn't
the
it?
The IP originated from Ohio.
Okay.
She thought that she was being sneaky and was using a program
right.
that would mask her IP and anonymous email thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that Kim went to the website, and there's a big old disclaimer. It does not mask your ISP number. And
uh-huh.
Kim searched the ISP number, and it went back to Ohio.
So what are the odds, exactly?
Yes, and right. that Twitter account that was trashing Kim's family and was going to post this information in 48 hours if blogs that were critical of them were not removed,
mm-hmm.
the Twitter account has now magically vanished.
Amazing. So poor Kim is sitting there, and just because she happens to know a blogger who's critical of Holly and that situation, she gets threatened supposedly or thinking anonymously that she better pull all this her friend's blog stuff down, which Kim has nothing to do with. Nothing to do with. And so she threatens her. Now, I've reached out to Holly again. I haven't heard back, but I have to be honest with you. I only did it maybe, you know, an hour ago, so she may not even seen the email. And I will update everybody on this as soon as if she ever does reach out. But if it can be proven unequivocally that that was Holly without question, that is repulsive. And let me tell you.
Well, even I sent you the documents.
Yes,
the correspondence between Kim and Holly. And you can see that Holly, it's Holly's Facebook page, and you can see that Holly, even if she is not operating the Casey Guts Twitter account,
uh-huh.
she is basically participating in an act of extortion by
yes.
even telling Kim that, you know, you have 48 hours, that you better go along with this person. She's participating
extortion.
In the act, and it's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, really, if you want to extort someone, you're being stupid anyway, but to extort an attorney? Are you kidding me?
And somebody who does this all day long, doesn't cost her anything, costs her a filing fee. It's not like you or me, Levi, where it would cost us a lot of money. This, to her, she can do in her sleep. And I'll tell you what, I hope she nails them, because that is absolutely disgusting that they tried to extort this from her. You know, obviously they were probably going to put up some lie about her. And the thing is, what the hell were they thinking? Did they really think that she would just turn around and say, oh, God, please take it down, please take it down? I mean, I've had stuff like that happen to me. And, you know, it's like, hey, bring it on. I mean, I don't know what the hell you could tell, you know, post about me that could be so, hasn't been already posted, you know, other than, you know, maybe a picture of me naked, which would shut the whole internet down. It would crash, scare everybody to death. You know, but I wish Kim all the luck. I tried to get in touch with her before the show, and we didn't have a chance to connect. But I know she's not going to let it drop, right? She's not going to let this go.
Well, you know, Trisha, that she was involved in the Haley Cummings case when there were a lot of nuts that were attracted to that case, and that they tried the same stuff on her. And one of them was a book that wrote, he wrote a book basically trying to say that Kim Boccaccio participated in the abduction of Haley.
Oh, he's
and
crazy,
he had
yeah.
sent her tons of stuff, posted tons of stuff on his website about her, and he kept it up. She got an injunction against him. He violated the injunction, and he spent about 24 hours in jail because of it. So I think a lot of people need to wise up before they continue down this road.
They do. And, you know, what I would advise these people that tried to extort Kim Boccaccio, fess up and throw yourselves at the mercy of her. And, you know, I'm not speaking for Kim. I don't know what she'll do. If I were her, I would just go ahead and do it. I'd call the police, you know, FBI. It's over interstate. It's, you know, an interstate thing. I mean, just slam them hard. How dare they? That absolutely really just upsets me to no end. And what I told Holly was, I said, you send me back anything, I will read it just as you write it. You know, it'll be your side of the story. And so we'll see. We'll see. But I'll tell you what, it is really disgusting. Real quickly, Levi, and then we're going to go to our next guest. Have you heard about Dr. Phil, who's going to be on Dr. Phil?
Yes. I wanted to ask me about that.
Oh, I
the
just...
Lisa Irwin's parents, yes. Deborah Bradley and Jeremy Irwin, are going to be on Dr. Phil. The parents who refuse to cooperate with law enforcement have lawyered up. They're not talking to the police, but they will travel to Los Angeles and participate in a talk show.
Well,
and that
they...
is raising everybody's eyebrows.
Yes, and I think it was a private investigator. Was it Ron Rugen who broke the story? I want to give credit where credit is due, but
it could have been. I don't know if he broke the story or not, but he's based there in Kansas City, and he has his finger on the pulse and everything that's going on the Lisa Irwin case. And it's just everybody's like, you know, if you want to talk to somebody, sit down with investigators, because investigators have said, talk to us from the very beginning. Then you cut the ties, and we still have questions for you. And they're not talking to investigators, but apparently they can talk to Dr. Phil.
And they're getting money, right?
I don't know if they're getting paid. I have no idea. Remember, you know, people thought that George and Cindy Anthony were getting paid. You know, I've gone on syndicated talk shows before, and the only thing that I got was a ride on the airport and a car to the studio. But these people are, it would be an exclusive interview. These are not people that you're seeing on the news every day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say that people like that hold out and don't give interviews all the time because they want to make it an exclusive. They want to try to, you know, make
jack up the price.
Serious. Yeah, and jack up the price and see if they can get paid. Remember, I think Dr. Phil, the way he got around it during the Cindy and George interview was that he was going to donate to their charity, the charity where the Anthony, some claim that they're living off the charity, where most of the proceeds go to their pockets.
Exactly. Well, Lisa Irwin's parents, let's remember now, perhaps Dr. Phil is offering something like, hey, you know, we'll fly, you know, 10 people you know out, give you, you know, passes to Disneyland. I mean, there's other ways to get around
Do you remember in the Haley Cummings case?
Yes.
That they, Ronald and Misty, got married a month after Haley vanished, and a lot of people were saying, you know what, this child's out there missing, and you're getting married. This is weird. They actually went to New York on their honeymoon, and NBC's Today Show paid for it. It was a honeymoon paid for by the Today Show for an exclusive interview, and that is very shady.
But then they can honestly say, we did not pay them money. That's why you have to ask, what else did they get other than
their expenses?
Well, and
I think we also need to look on, are they going to give any videos of the child to the Dr. Phil show?
And that they could pay for that,
Because I think in the Haley Cummings case, Ronald and Misty let the NBC Today show film that trashy wedding, that fiasco, and they probably were given licensing fees, and they were probably paid that way, and it's going to be interesting. Will the Dr. Phil show have new video of Lisa Irwin, and is that going to be the way where the parents will be paid?
Guarantee it they will, Levi. Well, Levi, thank you so much. You've helped me since I have not been caught up on anything. You've helped catch me up and helped catch all of us up. I really do appreciate it. What's coming up next on the Levi Page Show?
Well, we are going to be talking about just what we talked about right here, Lisa Irwin's parents' visit to Dr. Phil, and we're going to be going in-depth into the Ayla Reynolds case, the missing child from Waterville, Maine. Thanks for having me on, Trish. I hope you get better.
Thank you, Levi. You're a sweetheart. Take care.
All right.
Levi
Bye-bye.
Page, everybody. You can check him out on Facebook, facebook.com/LeviPage, and LeviPageBlog, I think it is, .com. I should have asked him before he left. I go to it automatically. I don't even know the address for sure. Okay, everybody, we're going to switch gears now. We have a very, very interesting book that we are going to discuss. It's a book called Brother's Blood, A Heartland, Cain and Abel, and it's by a gentleman named Scott Cowelty. And this is just a blood-curdling true crime story that started when he was born, but the crime occurred in 1975, Halloween night, but it continues to this day. And Scott, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio, my dear. Thank you for holding.
Thank you, Tricia. Thank you for asking me. Glad to be here.
And am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes,
Cowelty. Okay. Now, tell us, this is a story, and it is a Cain and Abel story. It's about Jerry and Leslie Mark. They were brothers. Leslie's a boy.
Yes. Uh-huh. And, Jerry was the oldest, Les was the youngest.
Okay. Tell us briefly about their family. They had father, mother. They grew up on a farm. Wealthy farmers, correct? Give us a rundown of paint us a picture of who this family is.
Right. There were four boys to the Mark family. Actually, I misspoke. Dick was the oldest, followed by Jerry, followed by Tom, followed by Leslie. They lived on a farm just outside of Cedar Falls, where I live, where I'm speaking from right now, Cedar Falls, Iowa. And they all grew up together. They were fairly close brothers. Jerry was best man at Les's wedding. They all got along reasonably well, although there were rumors they had the usual falling outs. And then on Halloween night, 1975, Jerry got on his motorcycle. He was living in Berkeley, California at the time. Honda 450, drove back to Iowa in 3 days and murdered Leslie in his bed, and Leslie's wife, Georgine, and their two children, Jeff and Julie, in their beds, got back on the motorcycle and rode off, thinking he could get away with it. Within 10 days, he was arrested. And basically, 5 months later, he was convicted and sent to Fort Madison, where he's now serving 4 consecutive life terms. But every 4 or 5 years, he mounts another appeal. And the last appeal actually was successful. The judge said he should be exonerated or get another trial. That was appealed by the state, and in 2007 was turned down because there was no real clear exculpatory evidence at all. That was just a frivolous case in many ways.
Oh, well, that was interesting. Let me interrupt you.
Insisting on his innocence, right?
Let me interrupt you. He is insisting on his innocence. We're going to get into the details of the case, which are really just appalling. But what did this judge say? Why should he be exonerated? Why did he get a new trial? What was the reasoning behind it after all these appeals? I'm sure that Jerry Mark was probably just as surprised as anybody.
Yes, actually, his mother was the most surprised because she had been insisting on his innocence, and finally she went around town. By then she was nearly 80, and said, see, I told you so. Jerry's been innocent, and now a judge has finally agreed with this. This was in 2006. But the state's appeal went right to a three-judge panel, and they said, wait a minute, there's no real clear evidence here that would sway a jury. There was an eyewitness that was in contradictory that seemed to be saying something that would exonerate him that supposedly wasn't admitted but actually was during the trial. And then there was some DNA evidence supposedly on the cigarette butts that was contradictory. But again, nothing that would contradict the major evidence, which was phone call records, cartridges, odd cartridges that he purchased with his own name and Social Security number, and then the motorcycle evidence. Those are the three big pieces.
Exactly.
He consistently lied about all these things and was caught in those lies.
And this is interesting. Let me paint the picture a little bit more for our audience. This family was your typical Midwestern hardworking family. They were farmers, but they worked hard, but they were wealthy. They had a big farm, and they were buying other smaller farms, and they had just this rich, incredible soil. And the father was not what you would call a warm, fuzzy dad. Is that correct?
Yes, the father really didn't get along with the boys all that well. No, Wayne Mark. Wayne supposedly kicked Jerry when he was young and fractured his tailbone, so Jerry always walked with a limp, an odd walk, and was in pain a lot, and that was because of his father's temper. So there was a lot of friction between Jerry and his father all of his life.
Again, and this is, Scott, this is something that I always talk about on Web Sleuth Radio, and this just is another arrow pointing to it. And that is, and I'm not excusing anybody, it's not an excuse, but we need to find out why people like Jerry Mark all of a sudden get on their Honda motorcycle and drive from Berkeley to Iowa and kill their brother, his wife, and then their two children. And I think a lot of it can be pointed to childhood abuse. And that doesn't necessarily even mean physical. We're talking, you know, mental and, all kinds of things. But again, here we have a very cold father. And Jerry, let's point out, turned out to be a hippie living in Berkeley and living off other people. He'd find women to pay his way, and yet here his brothers were these hardworking farmers, and Father Wayne was not pleased at all, right?
Right. Father Wayne was not pleased with Jerry because Jerry wasn't doing anything with his life. For a while he did well. He went to the Peace Corps, he was a lawyer, he actually passed the bar exam in Iowa and practiced law in Des Moines. Social services law. He was really an upstanding young man for a while, and then something happened. He went to Brazil in the Peace Corps, and people that have talked about this say he came back and was a different person, but I really haven't been able to corroborate that. In any case, he seemed to become a kind of sociopath. He began lying. He asked his brother to write a false recommendation for him in a letter, and I think my feeling now is that Jerry was probably had sociopathic tendencies all his life. It just came out in this particular set of circumstances within the family.
Exactly. And as we know, and our listeners and members of Web Sleuths know, we are trained psychologists. We tell ourselves that all the time. But it's getting easier and easier to see a sociopath, you know, because you can see the same types of things they do over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And again, Jerry Mark just fits that beautifully, as you say. Let's talk a little bit about the crime. Now, it's interesting in this book, Brother's Blood, you do something that I think I think other authors would not particularly do, but I love. And that's you recreate the thoughts that Jerry might be having or a conversation that maybe Jerry's brother and his wife had. You really didn't know what was said, but based on the evidence and you grew up with Jerry. You went to school with him, right? You knew him.
Yeah, I graduated from high school in 1961 and he graduated in 1960. And we knew each other fairly well. We knew each other in the hallways. We'd talk. One of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, polite, friendly, smart, funny, everything you'd want in a friend. And he was vice president of his senior class. His classmates still will not believe that he's guilty because they remember him as the nicest guy in the whole senior class.
And boy, doesn't that sound like a sociopath. How many sociopaths have we seen that are the school president, vice president, you know, everybody loves them, they're the best guys in the world, and then boom. It's like when they get cornered and they feel they have they can't get out unless they do something drastic. And this is what happened with Jerry Mark. Yeah. Wayne, Daddy Wayne, was dying. And again, the oldest reason in the book, money. And Jerry had actually been borrowing against his inheritance and kind of just blowing it all. And it looked like Brother Leslie was going to kind of be the patriarch of the family. Yes. And that made Jerry mad. And in fact,
Leslie moved into the home place and became the CEO of the Mark family real estate operations in September. And the murders took place in October, so the timing was right for this jealousy to suddenly rear its ugly head, you know.
Now, what's interesting about this book, and I really hope Web Sleuth members pick it up because it is fascinating, is this took place in 1975, and we take for granted now of, you know, cell phone pings and how easy it is to trace calls, and, you know, nobody can hide anywhere. This guy planned on how to do it, but he wasn't real bright. But he made phone calls along the way, and this is what I find interesting. If the police would have waited one more day to get the information from the phone companies, we're talking millions of records here that they had to go through. If the police would have waited one more day to get his phone records, they would have been wiped out, right? Because they just didn't keep them back then. I mean, the computers were the size of rooms.
Yes, they subpoenaed the records because they knew that if there was a record of those phone calls to his apartment in Berkeley from various spots on the road, they would know exactly where he was when he made the calls. And they went through all of the records. It took a lot of dogged police work, and they found the exact calls he made at the exact time from the exact place. And they trapped him. He was lying the whole time about where he was.
And one of the things he did was he said, well, yes, I was gone, but I was in Utah, when in reality he was in a whole other state. Right. And he said, I called home from Provo, Utah. No, because at that particular phone call, he was way, you know, two states away heading to Iowa.
He was in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
That's right, Cheyenne.
The last call he made was in Cheyenne instead of Provo. It's several hundred miles closer to Iowa.
Yes. Exactly. So right there, he's trapped himself. And I don't want to give everything away because, it's, like I said, it's just a fascinating book. But one really stupid thing he did, and it just amazes me that he thinks he can get away with it, and to this day still thinks that if he screams loud enough, people will think that he's not guilty.
Yes.
But one of the things he did, he had this old gun, and he had to buy these special bullets, and he bought them using his own name, right?
Yes, he did.
I mean, hello?
Well, the other kind of lethal ingredient in this story is his arrogance. He was just sure he could get by with it because he was so smart. And he really was a smart guy, and these hick law officers from Iowa would never go out to California and find anything. But in fact, they didn't have that much trouble. And the guy that sold him, the clerk that sold him the cartridges, was from Waterloo, Iowa, right next door to Cedar Falls. So they actually had a conversation about the cartridges, or just about things. And Jerry still signed his name and Social Security number for 38 long Colt cartridges, very odd, rare cartridges that were, in fact, the very size of the cartridges it needed in the pistol, which was in his possession at the time. So, once again, he trapped himself. Yes.
He did. And the other thing, too, not only his arrogance, but his glibness. I'm sure he fooled a lot of people the time, because he was loved. He was a good guy. He could get women all the time. Yeah. You know, he probably fooled his parents growing up. You know, and again, when you look at his childhood, you have a father that's just cruel to him and mean and physically abusive. Becoming a sociopath was his way of dealing with that. And I think they've proven now that a lot of people are born with the sociopath, ticker, and if something kicks it off, then boom, they're a sociopath. Doesn't mean that you'll be a sociopath, just if you have the right ingredients when you're growing up to become a sociopath. Now, something else that you did very interesting at the end of the book, and I haven't seen this done before, and I really like it. Explain how you went through the pieces of evidence and what you put at the end of the book.
Well, I thought it was important. If people want to know what the story is without anything from me, because I do add what I call imagined probabilities.
Uh-huh.
In other words, my own kind of interpretation of the events with conversations and dreams. I don't really know that they occurred, but something like that occurred in the story that I create. But in the rest of the book, I just give the sources. I thought it was important. If people want to read it without all that stuff, they can read the last 60 pages or so. And it's nothing but the sources I used, pretty much in the order I used them. So there's a revolver chapter in the story, And then there's a revolver chapter in the sources, so people can see where I got the material for the revolver story. And they can go through the whole book that way and just read the sources either back and forth or just all by itself. And that way they can see the material in its factual way, and then they can also read my version of it if they like, but they don't have to. You know, you can read it either way.
Well, I would suggest reading both, because both are very, very fascinating. And, you know, when I started to read the book, Scott, we're talking with Scott Kowalty about his book, Brother's Blood, a true crime story about a brother who kills his brother, his wife, and their two children. And when I first started reading it, I thought, well, now, how does he know Jerry dreamed this? And I went, oh, okay. And then I looked at the back of the book, and I went, oh, this is brilliant. This is great, because it really does. It really paints an incredible picture of this man and his arrogance, his glibness. You know, he's like Scott Peterson, Drew Peterson, and O.J. Simpson kind of all rolled up into one.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating character, and I'm glad he's in prison for 4 consecutive life terms, because he's the type of guy that would kill again. There
well,
is no doubt.
George Coulthurst, Georgine's father, is still alive, and he has spoken several times about this. In fact, he was at the first reading where we kind of unveiled the book. And he said they've lived in fear all their lives that Jerry would either escape, which is unlikely, but he would get paroled or let go on some technicality or win an appeal, and then they would be afraid for their lives. So they were hoping for the death penalty, but I don't know. I think Jerry probably killed his family, and that was all he had in mind, because that was a way for him to inherit the entire operation. And
right.
Anything after that would be really strange. But who knows? If he did that, he's capable of anything.
Exactly. And that's just it. It's like I said, the oldest reason, if you will, in the world is he wanted the inheritance. That
yes.
Father Wayne was dying. There was this huge real estate. He was going to be cut out. You know, Brother Leslie was the good guy now, and Dad loved him more. And that's all it took for this sociopath Jerry to kill his brother and his entire family. Where can we pick up the book, Brother's Blood? Where can we pick
well,
that
it's
up?
It's on Amazon. It's a Nook book and a Kindle book, both on Amazon, just as a straight paperback, and then for an electronic e-book, either on Kindle or Nook. It's also available directly from the publishers, Ice Cube Press in North Liberty, Iowa. He has a large website, and that information is available on the Brother's Blood page on Facebook as well. And I'm currently working on a website which will include a blog with all the recent information I've gathered. I'm going to be talking with the lawyer that was disbarred, and I'll add that information. I also talked with a prison ombudsman who knows Jerry and knows what Jerry is doing right now. I'm going to add all that and continue adding to it as part of the Brother's Blood webpage. That's coming, I would say, within the next 6 weeks. I'll be having that.
Oh, great.
Out.
You'll have to send us a link, and we can put it up on Web Sleuth. Have you spoken to Jerry since?
I did interview him in 1980. At that time, he was hoping I would help exonerate him, because he kept insisting on his innocence, and he pleaded with me to tell his story, which means get me out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, by then I had read the trial transcripts, and I was very wary of him. And then I talked to more and more people, interviewed more and more people, and realized that he just lies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I began thinking about, now it's time to write a book. And then when this last appeal was turned down, that's when I started in earnest 4 years ago. It took about 4 years to write because of all the sources and all the starts and stops, you know how that can be.
Absolutely.
So I don't think he will ever talk to me about it, because it would mean he'd have to confront his own, well, the accuser now is me, the accuser of his crime. He'd either have to confess and say, I did it and you got me, or, you bastard, why did you write that awful book? That would be
exactly. And if you sat down and asked him these questions, like, well, how come the records show that you were in Wyoming and you said you were in Provo, you know, he won't know how to, he'll try and answer it, and he will try and fool you, but he won't.
Well, that's
why
he couldn't take the stand. If he took the stand, he'd have to answer those questions, and he had no answers.
There are no, the only answer is he's guilty. He did it. And that's the answer. Well, I think it's interesting. You've been on this case literally since day one. You know the man. And fortunately, you are there. You're kind of the record keeper, especially for Georgine's family, to keep the lies out there so nobody is fooled by him. And that's important. We need the truth.
That is really why I wrote the book. It certainly wasn't to entertain. This is not a book you really enjoy in that entertainment sense. And it wasn't to make any money. I'll never make money off it. But it was to
right.
set the record straight. People really need to know what he did, because there are people that still think he's innocent. He could never do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the record shows differently.
Well, that's good. And that, and we need more authors like you that are out there to keep the record straight. Because believe me, there are a lot of Jerry Marks out there who are doing the same thing, and we just don't know about them. So thank you so much, Scott Qualty. I'm sorry, I keep mispronouncing your name. Qualty.
Qualty, good.
Qualty, yeah. Qualty, Qualty. Scott Qualty, Brothers Blood, A Heartland, Cain and Abel. I would highly recommend it to our Web Sleuths listeners and Web Sleuths readers and members. Thank you so much for joining us on Web Sleuths. And when
thank
you get
you
that...
Thank you for having me, Tricia. Appreciate it. You sound great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. When you talked to me on Friday, I know I just sounded like a, you know, sounded like I was talking underwater. So when you get that website up, let me know and we'll put it up on Web Sleuths for you, okay?
I sure will, Tricia.
Okay.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, my dear. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Kimster, are you with us, my dear?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, good. Well, now, wasn't that interesting? This is the nicest guy. He approached me and said, you know, I have this book, and I would love to come on your radio show. And I said, well, let me read it first. And I just found it really, really interesting. Now, it's really different because he does basically make up a lot of, not the facts. The facts are all there, hardcore. But he makes up the scenarios and the scenes of how it could have occurred. And it's really interesting. And, you know, I like to get stories like that out there. I really do. And speaking of getting out there, since we didn't have a show last week, and by the way, we're not having one next week because of Super Bowl Sunday. I'm not competing with football or the Puppy Bowl on Animal Planet, people. We do have two Web Sleuths hot cold cases to talk about. And Kimster, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Well, thank you, Tricia. I'm going to start with this week's hot cold case, and it's about Andrea Bowman, and she's been missing since 1989. Andrea was last seen March 11, 1989, around Hamilton, Michigan. There were also unconfirmed sightings of her in the following days around Holland, Michigan. To date, Miss Bowman has not been located. She was 15 years old at the time of her disappearance, and she would be 34 years old today. One of our members has stated that she went to school with Andrea and that she was bullied at school. She seems to feel that might be why she left. However, her birth mother is also a member on websleuths.com and has said she went missing from a youth home after having accused her adopted father of assaulting her. And then finally, adding more to the mystery, one of our members learned that Andrea is listed as being one of the alleged victims of Larry Hall, who confessed to murdering Lori DePies from Wisconsin and is a suspect of murdering many others. So kind of ties in with the with our serial killer forum as well.
But Kimster, so wouldn't it be wonderful, though, if we are able to find her alive? I mean, that
yeah,
she just laughed and just mm-hmm. said, enough, I'm done being, you know, abused and bullied, I'm out of here. Oh, my God, I would just love to have that happen just once, where we think they're not alive and they are.
Yeah, in fact, I was even going to mention that, Trish. I'm glad you did, because this is one of those cases that could turn into another J.C. Dugard, I think. You know,
yes.
There's a lot of speculation out there, and it could go any way, but I wonder if she isn't alive. So go to www.websleuths.com, click the link under Andrea's picture at the top right-hand corner area of the page to learn more about this very intriguing case, and we'll see. Maybe she is alive out there, which would be really awesome. But you'll get to meet her school friend on there, and her biological mother is also posting on there.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Last week's hot cold case that we didn't get to talk about because we didn't have our show was a case of Hazel Klug, and my apologies to the family if I'm not quite pronouncing that right. It's spelled K-L-U-G, but I know it's not pronounced Klug. It's like Klug or something along that line. She's been missing since May of 1986, and Hazel was a title researcher for a Richmond law firm, and she spoke to a coworker whom she was dating on the phone around 11:30 p.m. on May 20th, 1986 from her home. in Richmond, Virginia. It was a normal conversation. Hazel gave no indication that anything was wrong, but Hazel did not report to her workplace the next day on May 21st. The police searched her home and discovered that her dog and her vehicle were both at the house, as were all of her personal belongings, including her clothing, makeup, and jewelry. The only items missing were Hazel's purse and a suitcase. The police do say they think foul play was involved. The unidentified forum was the first area on Web Sleuths that made us aware of Hazel's disappearance. One of our members thought she looked familiar to an unidentified remains case. Hazel's family member has not heard back yet from investigators to see if this might be a match. So we may be finding her soon. In the meantime, please stop by Hazel's thread, which is in the missing forum. Learn more about her case and what has been discussed so far, and let her family members know that you care.
And again, Kimster, this is something that I'm going to push this every week because I will never stop saying it. It means so much to family members to have a stranger come on and post about their loved one's case. You don't need to sleuth. You don't need to jump in and be a big part of it. Just post. If you've never posted before, just do it this once and say, I'm thinking of you. You know, there are people out there that care. And that is one of the main reasons we have Web Sleuths, and one of the main reasons we have the big discussions on the forum, is we want to steer people to the other cases that don't have the big media attention. Right, Kimster?
Exactly. Even if you want to just, if you find a case that intrigues you for some reason and you want to, like I call it, adopt
uh-huh.
a whole case, just one. You know, like everybody that knows me real well knows that I'm very involved with the missing Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. I go around and try to help a little bit on other cases, but that's my mainstay there. And you can do that too. And it means so much to the family members when that happens.
It does. It really does. So I would just encourage everybody, come to websleuths.com, and just click on the register button. It's all over the place. You can find it easily. And you truly, truly can make a difference. I know sometimes people think, oh, it won't do any good. But anyway, I know it will do some good. Okay, well,
yes, and you know, and,
go ahead.
And I want to add, Tricia, real quick, because you said that, anybody can ask Kathy, the mother of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks, if the little bit I've done hasn't done any good. It has done a world of good for her, way more than I even understand. So, and you can do this too. So go out and do it, guys.
Absolutely. Some of the things that we're working on for future shows, Kyron Horman, we're trying to get an update there. Hopefully we'll have some information for you. We're just working on a whole bunch of things. And remember what I said in December, the year 2012 is going to be a great year for the truth in the JonBenet Ramsey case. And I can tell you no more. This is one time I can't be bought. Normally I can't be bought. Normally, you know, pretty much a burrito supreme from Taco Bell and I'll spill the beans, but not this time. Okay, you've got to just trust me on this. Kimster, it seems like I had something else. Oh, yes. Okay, Dr. Phil and baby Lisa Irwin's parents are going to be on Dr. Phil. Do we know the date? I never have found the date yet. Have you heard about that, Kimster?
Boy, I don't either, but I'll tell you what. If you go to the Lisa Irwin thread on websleuths.com, you'll find out right away because our sleuthers are on that
on
case.
It. And by the way, by the way, people, okay, Mom's here with pointing a little finger, shaking a finger. We had to close down one of the threads because everybody was arguing about whether Debbie was a lush or being a lush. And, you know, we just got to keep it calm, okay? We need to look at the facts, and it's easy to get into name-calling and judging and all of that, but we're not one of those type of forums. We really just want to stick with the facts and discuss the facts and pick apart the facts so we can figure out what's going on. So poor Beach, one of our administrators, was just like, I'm shutting this down, people. So be nice, okay? We need everybody to be nice. Okay, I'm going to go drink some more of that wonderful cough medicine. I'm telling you, on the street, I could probably get $5,000 for it. It's that good, but I'm keeping it. It's prescribed by a doctor, don't worry. Kimster, thank you so much. Anything else you would like to add?
No, I just want to say hello to everybody out there and have fun watching the Super Bowl, and we'll see you the next week.
That's right. We will not be here Super Bowl Sunday. We'll be here the Sunday after that, and I have some great guests I'm working on. I can't tell you who yet because I don't want to get your hopes up, but it's going to be a great, great show. Oh, I forgot. We have to do a little bit of legal stuff. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the hosts, and I take no responsibility for them, especially my own. So there, Web Sleuth Radio is not the same as WebSleuth.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. Okay, everybody, please be safe. Thank you, thank you, thank you for caring. Thank you for posting on Web Sleuth. Thank you for reading. Thank you for becoming involved. That's what it's all about. Kimster, once again, you just rocked it, my dear. Thank you for all you do. And we'll see you, everybody, in a couple of weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.